Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is a subcommittee of the subcommittee of Ways and Means Public Safety. Representative Patridge is in a meeting with our leadership. He'll be just a few minutes. Representative Hansen is joining us now. Senator Devlin is ill today, will not be with us. And so Representative Patridge will be along very, very shortly. Let me just say by way of discussion today that we need to kind of set some parameters for our meeting today. As we open the public testimony on the public hearing of Senate Bill 5509, we want to make certain that your cell phones are off. We want to make certain that you understand that we're going to limit, we're going to limit testimony to those that have signed up for a total of about 2 minutes apiece. We've got, and there's more pages coming in addition to those that are here. Of sign up, so we're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes apiece, and then we want you to finally recognize that the prison forecasts are in. We received those on Thursday, and I think the spike was that we were going from 11,000 and change to just sort of just over 13,000. We weren't even going to stop at the 12,000. I think the most recent forecast adds about 300 to that number instantly. So our forecasts are already indicating that we're going to have more facilities. So with that, we will then go ahead and open the public hearing on Department of Corrections Senate Bill 5509 and open it to public testimony. And we have from Baker County, Fred Warner, the chair of the commission, Karen Yardley, and Carl Stiff, county commissioner, and Dave Lindley. If those folks would like to come up, please address the committee with your name and where you're from, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, just so the audience knows, we're going to try to take those folks that are over 100 miles first. There's a group from Baker, there's a group from Lakeview, and there's a group for sure of county community corrections directors, all of who came from a pretty long distance. So we'll take those first and work through the list.
Okay. And we have had testimony from the folks from Baker. Mike Nelson has been here. Offers an excellent testimony. He was a portion of the governor's transition team. Chair Warner, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much, Tom. Chairman Patridge, who is not here, members of the committee. My name is Fred Warner, and I'm the chairman of the Board of Commissioners for Baker County. I'm here today with representatives from Baker County who support legislation which supports what the Department of Corrections is recommending in its budget request generally and specifically as it applies to the operations at Powder River Correctional Facility. I would like to introduce those with me today. Carl Stiff, he's a county commissioner. Karen Yakeley is the chairman of our Prison Advisory Committee. Dave Lindley is the chair of our Industrial Development Committee. Nancy Shark is in the back, city council member. Bob Shepard is our economic development director, and John Carey is from New Directions Northwest. In Baker City, we are fortunate to host one of the most innovative correctional facilities in the state. Over the past 12 years, the A&D treatment program at Powder River has proven to be one of the most effective addictions programs in the state. We strongly support the concept of extending A&D treatment to inmates housed at Powder River. Converting the entire facility into an intensive alternative incarceration correctional facility, which has a focus on changing the criminal addict, makes sense to us, and we advocate the passage of legislation which supports this approach. We support the idea of expanding transitional leave and or early release for inmates who successfully complete this rigorous program. Because it makes good public safety sense for citizens of Oregon, it saves valuable tax dollars, it will reduce the number of people who return to the prison, and it holds inmates accountable for their behavior and contributes to their successful transition from prison to the community. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to testify before this committee. Dave.
Chairman Bob Patridge and members of the committee, my name is Dave Lindley. I'm current chairman of Baker City Industrial Development Commission and a practicing certified public accountant in Baker City. I was born and raised in Baker City, and except for a time in the Army and a few weeks in Portland, I spent my career working in Baker City. I, along with Commissioner Warner and others, are here to testify on behalf of this bill, specifically to advocate for expansion of the current successful inmate alcohol and drug program at Powder River Correctional Facility located in Baker City. As the committee is no doubt aware, Powder River currently houses 178 minimum security inmates, and 50 beds are dedicated to alcohol and drug treatment programs. The facility is scheduled to expand to 278 beds by July 1, 2003. I understand funding is in place through a combination of federal and state grants to expand the alcohol and drug treatment program to 114 beds. Also, if this bill becomes law and is funded, the entire 278 beds may become dedicated to the drug and alcohol treatment program. Essentially, all eligible prisoners in the state would be required to participate in the program before early release. As others will testify, the use of a highly structured and regimented routine prior to prisoners' return to the community has proven to be not only highly effective in terms of reduced recidivism, but also very cost-effective in terms of use of correction dollars. I believe this bill makes for good social policy as well as wise use of state tax dollars. Baker City is a logical location to implement expansion of this program. In the mid-1980s, consideration was given to placing a minimum security facility on the eastern side of the state. The citizens of Baker City quickly responded. Soon, a group of interested citizens comprised of local political and economic leaders organized and put together a packet of available sites and other community amenities. After choices were narrowed down, the group organized a drive to raise money for land to site the prison in Baker City. In literally a few days, over $60,000 was donated by local businesses, and the city of Baker agreed to financially participate, and arrangements were made to purchase the suitable land for the prison. For many years, Baker City has experienced volatile and generally depressed and extended downside economic cycles. Unemployment rates are frequently near the highest in the state. March 2003, Baker County 11.5%, state of Oregon 8.6%. The county's largest industry in terms of employment is government, including local, state, and federal government employees. The highest average salaries, including fringe benefit packages, are generally those of government employees. These jobs are extremely important to Baker City's economy as they provide a relatively stable source of dollars to circulate throughout the community, over $40 million in 2001. The potential of adding another 31 jobs in the drug and alcohol program would be very significant to Baker City's economy. Workers from Powder River Correction have successfully integrated into the community. Inmates have been employed in numerous tasks, including several community maintenance projects, assistance to the poor and elderly, including snow removal and providing firewood, support of state, federal forest service, and city watershed forest fire fuel reduction programs. They've also been used to help build the Snake River facility at Representative Butler's hometown of Ontario. If community efforts are needed to sway your decision, you just have to ask. If needed, Baker City will rally in support of expanding Powder River Corrections Facility. If the state needs more land for the facility, count on Baker City to do more than its part to make it happen. Thanks for your time and interest this afternoon.
Thank you.
Before I begin, I want to thank you for what you do for the state of Oregon. It's important as a former mayor and a former board member on the Oregon Mayors Association. I appreciate volunteer work. I'm here to express my support for the programs in alcohol drug treatment provided at Powder River Correctional Facility. Recidivism reduction helps us all in a number of ways. As one of the community volunteers on the transition program team at Powder River Correctional Facility, we are providing needed knowledge and skills to help transition the inmates back into their community so they can be successful law-abiding citizens. With declining budget dollars, it is time to rethink our state's position on locking up so many offenders. Certainly, some offenders in prison who have been convicted of nonviolent offenses could be successfully managed in their community. Those who do go to prison need programs designed to reduce the likelihood of their return to prison. Attached is a fact sheet showing data from the Department of Corrections. At an average cost of $62.24 per inmate per day, the programs, work skills development, and alcohol and drug treatment are good investments if we get inmates back to their communities making good choices. Locking up so many offenders and building more prisons is not the answer to our long-term public safety needs, nor our current budget situation. People in this community of Baker are very proud of what is accomplished at Powder River Correctional Facility and the community projects completed by the inmate labor. We have partnerships which have been formed over the years. Most recently, partnerships have been formed, to name a few, with Step Forward Activities Incorporated, which is for disabled workers, remanufacture printer cartridges for state agencies, which is part of the governor's sustainability efforts. New Directions Northwest, our alcohol and drug treatment and intervention programs. Oregon Department of Forestry, Bureau of Land Management, local government entities and nonprofits such as our library, historic Baker City, the City of Baker City, Baker County, our Chamber of Commerce, and Riparian Repair. Oregon Department of Transportation, and recently Department of Human Resources, is doing a tri-county to cut and deliver firewood to indigent clients. We also partner with the Oregon Department of Employment as part of the transition program. They put a kiosk in the administrative office of Powder River, and inmates can get online, and they're helped with their skills in finding jobs when they're released to communities in the state of Oregon. We truly believe in what we are doing at Powder River Correctional Facility. I know it works, and I know we are making a difference in helping inmates make good choices and be good law-abiding citizens. I list my volunteer efforts just simply so you know some of my life experiences and to let you know that I do believe in what we're doing out there. I teach the financial management piece on the transition team.
Thank you.
My name is Carl Stepp. I'm a Baker County Commissioner. It has been my privilege for several years as a physician in private practice, Baker County Medical Officer, and Medical Director of New Directions Drug Rehabilitation Facility, to watch the constant improvement of the rehabilitation program at Powder River Corrections Facility in Baker City, Oregon. So it comes as no surprise to me that the return of confinement rate is less than 12% at Powder River Corrections, which is the lowest failure rate of any prison system, to my knowledge, in the United States. What must be considered is the dollar savings for the state by not having so many returning inmates, and the fact that many of the inmates leaving Powder River have already obtained employment through the programs provided, which makes them taxpayers. Completion of the Powder River program also makes it possible for them to leave the facility 6 months early, which is a big savings. The exciting part is they actually return and become part of their community as husbands and fathers with a totally changed attitude on life. They believe it is their responsibility to be their brother's keeper. This is what makes it possible for them to beat the drug addiction and thinking only of self, as they did in the past. Your future support of Powder River Correction Facility will be repaid far beyond anything that you can imagine. Thank you, Carl Stepp.
Thank you.
Here's one question.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. I just need to know, we've got folks that are both pro and con relative to any of the siting of these facilities. Were there any negative feelings in your community before this prison came on board in Baker County?
Yeah, Tom. Before Powder River was sited there, the community went through a long debate. There were many people, and Powder River is a minimum security facility. A lot of people had grave reservations, but I could say probably today 95 to 99% of the people in Baker County consider Powder River an asset to the community.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate all of you traveling so far to be here today. I apologize I was a little late for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Just we're going to have to, because of the fire code, people who don't have a seat sitting down, we're going to ask you to step out into the hallway and either go downstairs, and I'm going to ask people as they testify to then ask them to go down either outside the House or Senate chambers to do observances, just so people know what we're going to do. We just did Baker. We're going to do the people from Lakeview next, then panel number three is going to be the Oregon Association of Corrections people, and then we're going to do probably a couple of the sheriff's panels, and then the out-of-town people. That's kind of the plan, so people know. So I'll try and say, because the hearing room's so tight, I'll try and say who's up and who's on deck so that people can be up here to hear the hearings. I would ask, did Ben and the department people leave?
They were standing.
If the department people, if somebody can poke their head out, maybe Paul, if you can grab the department people, they can join us up here. So at least if we have technical questions, we could ask them something. That would be helpful. All right, I'd ask the people from Lakeview to come forward. Arlene Clark, Daryl Anderson, Susie Carhill, Bill Berry, Jane O'Keefe. Are there further people from Lakeview from that panel? Whoever your Lakeview panel is.
David Sawyer.
David. I'd also ask people who are in the room and committee members as and people who are going to testify, if you have written testimony, please, because of the amount of people who want to testify, if you just summarize your written testimony, and if somebody else has already said what you've said, try and be additive rather than repetitive. It would be helpful, I think, to the committee. We've had about a week and a half of testimony regarding the Department of Corrections budget, so I think we're pretty well aware of the issues. We're more, I don't think you have to educate us on the basics. You need to educate us on how it affects your communities or your programs individually. So that's where we're at. So if you just summarize your written testimony, if you have written testimony rather than read it verbatim, we will get copies of it and members will have an opportunity to review that. Go ahead. Whoever's the leadoff hitter for the Lakeview panel, please identify yourself.
I guess that would be me. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Arlene Clark. I am the mayor of Lakeview, and I have with me some panel members whom I would like to introduce at this time. On my far left is Susie K. Hill. She is the director of the Crisis Center. Next is Bill Berry, a former county commissioner. The other side of me, I'm surrounded by former county commissioners. This is Jane O'Keefe. Daryl Anderson, who has multiple hats. He's a town engineer. He's the president of the Chamber of Commerce and the chairman of the school board. And last but not least, David Sawyer, who is the town manager. I'm not going to take up a whole lot of your time. I have put together a packet that pretty much explains our position. I would like to say that the people that are here because they regard the building of the Warner Creek facility as essential to our economic survival. And judging from the response that I've gotten from the townspeople since the town proposed working with DOC to expedite this, I have about 10 in favor for every one against. So I think that even though they may not be noisy about it, they are very supportive. And that being said, I am just going to pass this along to Jane.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jane O'Keefe. I live in Lake County on a ranch near Adel, Oregon. I come before you today to urge the committee to look favorably at the construction of the Warner Creek Correctional Facility for Lakeview in the 2003-05 biennium. As a former county commissioner, I've been involved in the issue of prison siting in Lake County from the beginning. And I'm not here to rehash the past, although I would certainly be glad to answer any questions you may have. The only thing I want to say about the prison siting issue in Lake County is that there was processes, both state and local. The processes were legal and defensible, and no denying it emotional. I also doubt that the legislature wants to revisit prison siting. I would just tell you from my own experience. The issue for you today is to determine the proper timing of construction of the Warner Creek Correctional Facility, and it's my understanding that Department of Corrections, via population forecast, has determined that the 03-05 biennium is a correct time to construct the facility. There's many reasons that I support construction of the facility at this time, and among them are the investments that the state of Oregon has already made in the site. In fact, approximately about $6 million to date. There's also availability of geothermal resources in the area, which can be a potential cost savings when the facility becomes operational. Finally, there's an undeniable economic boost that the prison construction and operation will have on Lakeview and Lake County. I, quite frankly, am lucky that my family's fortunes do not depend on the economic vitality of the community I live on. We're cattle ranchers. But most of the local business owners are not that fortunate. They've suffered through many years of poor economic conditions.
Our microphones don't do this downstairs.
When I made the decision to support the location of a prison in Lake County, it was because of these local businesses that so badly needed the economic help. I want to close today by saying not only am I a citizen of Lake County, I'm also a citizen of the state of Oregon. I'm chair of the local education service district, and I have two children in Oregon public schools. I'm not blissfully unaware of the monetary crisis that the state of Oregon faces. In urging you to go ahead with construction of the Warner Creek Correctional Facility, I'm not asking you to do something that's fiscally irresponsible. I'm asking you to do something that will fulfill your obligation to the citizens of Oregon, who not once but twice approved mandatory sentencing for certain crimes, and also to help a rural community in its quest for economic viability. Thank you for your time today, and I will be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe. Who's next?
Next is Susie Cahill.
I'm Susie Cahill with the Lake County Crisis Center, and I am a third-generation resident of Lake County, and I hope everyone in this room will visit Lake County because it's a truly wonderful place. However, because of the economic conditions that we're facing, we're in trouble. We've lost, we have a population of about 7,000 people, 8,000 square miles. We have lost 800 jobs in 10 years. So we're in desperate financial shape. According to the Oregon benchmark figures, Lake County is 34th in the economic index. We are 30th in the child well-being index. Our unemployment hovers officially somewhere between 14 and 17%. I'm not sure about that figure sometimes. Our net job growth is minus 36%. I think that's an optimistic figure based on the fact that many folks have left the community. At the Lake County Crisis Center, in a 12-month period, we've served over 1,000 people. 97% of those people are women and children, and those are domestic violence, sexual assault issues, and plain old poverty. So I'm extremely concerned about my community. 65% of Lakeview's children, Lake County children, fall in the poverty guidelines for free and assisted, government-assisted meals. The difficult part of this prison thing is, yes, we've had disagreements in the community, but I believe in the end we are friends and we do like each other, and I think we'll be okay. So I'm asking for your support to help us do something to help ourselves, and we're that kind of community that's capable of saving itself.
Thank you.
Darrell.
Chairman Patridge, members of the committee, my name is Darrell Anderson. I own a consulting engineering firm in Lakeview. I'm also the chairman of the school board and the chamber president this year's Arlene Committee. On February 24th, school district number 7 voted to support the Warner Creek Correction Facility and the town's efforts to maintain that construction out there due to our economy and issues in Lakeview. Our student enrollment is down 129 students from just 5 years ago, from 951 to 822. That's a 14% loss, and that reflects $645,000 approximately in funding based on student enrollment. We also have 71% of our student body on free and reduced lunch, which is a pretty good indicator of the economic conditions in Lakeview. The school feels this is a needed addition to the Lakeview area. The Chamber of Commerce in its March 3rd meeting also voted to support the prison effort. The Chamber has been supporting that effort since its inception back in 96. And from that support, the Chamber only received one negative comment from one of its members. This site, you know, is somewhat unique. As you know, there's over $6 million of infrastructure that's already to the site. The prison has already been sited. One of the uniquenesses of it is the geothermal energy that is a resource there. The DOC staff, has worked up numbers, I'm sure you're aware, on the cost savings over the lifetime operation of this facility that the geothermal will save. This is a real asset, we feel. As a business owner in Lakeview, I've seen several businesses close recently, and as a consulting engineer, economic development and projects of some type going on are needed for the viable survival of our economy. Thank you.
Bill?
My name is Bill Berry. I'm here to talk to you today, of course, about fundings of the prison, and of course we're all aware of the economic conditions that you're dealing with. I talked last week with our juvenile officer. He said that his juvenile crime prevention fund was cut. As you know, the state cut about $6 million from that. The county diversion funds have been cut 50%. These programs are designed to interdict these juveniles before they get into the prison system. The reason I bring this up, of course, is that you've already got the latest figures on the predictions of the prison population. I'm not sure that those predictions have integrated the severity of those cuts and what they might do, because those people that are being interdicted now will no longer have the service available to them because the funds have already been cut. So that's an important point. The other point that I would like to make to you is that, well, the old cliche, you have to spend money to make money, and you buy when you can, you don't buy when you have to. By issuing those certificates of participation at this point, probably the lowest interest rate you'll see over the next several decades. It's good business sense, and as Jane stated, we are all citizens of Oregon. You're using our money. You're fiscally responsible to use that wisely, and I'm sure that you're all aware of what the advantages would be to go ahead and build the prison on schedule. The other thing is, if you're going to go out leasing beds, Lake County has had, as a commissioner, we lease beds from Klamath County. It's an expensive proposition, and it brings nothing back to the community. So if you're going to be looking at leasing beds, you may have to, but you're going to need this facility, and you're going to need it built on schedule. One other thing, the economic drop that we are seeing in all phases of the county is continuing to decrease. And everyone knows that if you allow the infrastructure to collapse, that infrastructure has to be rebuilt before you can get up back up to status quo. The schools are losing funding. Teacher recruitment is going to be difficult. I was on the hospital board for 29 years. We have one of the best facilities, rural facilities, in the state of Oregon there. We have had a continuous building program, a continuous recruitment program. We have physicians now that are very capable, but it's a district hospital. We get about $450,000 a year from our taxes. The losses in the emergency room at this time exceed that. Some of the people that are using the emergency room are the ones without money. They're without funds. They can't get in to see a doctor during their regular visiting hours. They go to the emergency room after hours, they get their child taken care of or whoever, and the hospital picks up the bill. So those are the things that we're dealing with. We need this facility. Economically, it's a very essential part of the job creation that's needed. The predictions say that we should have a possible increase of 230 jobs, 150 of the prison employees, and about 83 ancillary. Those are the things that we need to keep the stimulus going that we can build on. And one other thing, when this prison was on schedule, we had a contractor who had already taken an option on a piece of property in the urban growth boundary. He was going to build two spec houses last fall, had plans for building 32 more. He told the commissioners, he came to the commissioners and told us that he knew what the average salary of the prison employees were going to be. He knew what type of houses they needed. He was ready to build them. When the prison was put on hold, he disappeared. Those are the things that we're dealing with. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sawyer.
And David.
Mr. Chairman and committee members and staff, I'd like to try and summarize, and one thing that I'd like to start with is the notion of intention. You know, I really firmly believe that it's the state intent to do what's right, both for the communities of the state, for the DOC programs that they're intended to serve, and do that in an economically and a socially just way. I believe also that it's been the town of Lakeview's attitude with the state and with DOC to work in that kind of cooperative, sound intention method. And I think that method has led to the kinds of positive impacts that we brought to the table as this discussion has proceeded. And those are positive economic impacts, both for our town and for this project. We have pursued cooperatively with DOC a number of options, looking at ways of reducing costs, spreading costs, looking at going to the federal government for some of the infrastructure costs that would defer costs from the state. This is the kind of attitude and relationship that the town has tried to bring to the table amidst a crisis, amidst an economic situation that's decaying around our schools, it's decaying around our downtown infrastructure. And I think as the months continue to play out, you're going to see more efficiencies put on the table. So some of the financial concerns that you've had will continue to get addressed. We worked out a cooperative arrangement with TVCC, the Treasure Valley Community College, that's going to allow training locally. That means a bigger economic impact locally and less state dollars. We've been talking about some design issues with some of the construction people. Can we have some of this stuff provided locally? Can we get some cost reductions? The land was donated for this facility. The system development charges for this facility are cheaper than any facility that will ever have been built. You'll save $3.2 million in geothermal operation costs because of that system being a part of this facility. Those are all on the table because of the cooperative, positive relationship between DOC, the town, the county, and the state of Oregon. And I believe firmly that if you go forward with this construction schedule, and we see this happen in this biennium, you're going to continue to see more positive reductions. And we're all going to see this as an opportunity for exploring how to save costs. Let's get down into the details even further. Let's find the best way to make this a standard facility, a standard process between DOC and a local municipality to do the best that you can and that we can. I believe that the efficiencies are there to make the money a viable option for the state. The economic benefits both locally and for the state, 311 jobs, $20 million in extra spin-off dollars being spent through construction. There's support throughout the community, and the groups that are represented here show that, as well as the letters that you've received. And there's a desperate need. I've only been in Lakeview a year. I come to it with a little more objectivity, maybe. And I've seen, again, the bottom start to fall out. You can put that plug in by going forward with this construction schedule, and we can continue to work cooperatively to make this the best project as possible for the state and for the town. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions as well.
We'd all like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. And if you have any questions for any of the panel, have at us, and we'll see if we can answer them.
What are the city charges and systems development charges related to this project from the city of Lakeview that are currently budgeted versus? Do you have an idea?
The total amount that was paid by DOC was $395,000.
What about ongoing? Is there any further?
There is no ongoing cost for system buy-in.
Okay. Other questions to the panel? Okay. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm going to change up my order already. I know that there's a group from Lakeview who may not be supportive necessarily of what we just heard, so I'd ask them to come forward. It's Dan Napier, Jerry Dunbar, and Diana Adams. My next panel is going to be the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. After that, who's on deck? If there are other people, are there other groups besides the three of you who are here from, any other individuals from Lakeview who are here? Okay. Who are on the list to testify?
No.
Okay. Also, Dale Penn, and I don't know if I'm going to get to the group from Marion County today. If not, we're going to invite you back for a specific time for invited testimony, just because of the amount of people. I will try and get to the sheriff's group, but since the Marion County group is here locally, I'm going to ask them to maybe come at a different time. Also, the Ask Me group, Marion, Buck, and unless you have somebody from out of town who needs to testify, I'll have you have invited testimony, as well as Brian Lashmit. I'll invite in for invited testimony. So just so you're more than invited to stay, but I just want to let people know where we're at.
Okay.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Yeah. Chairman Patridge, my name is Dan Napier. I'm a small rancher from Lake County. To my right is Diana Adams, and to my left is Jerry Dunbar. We'll go through our comments as quickly as possible and appreciate the opportunity. I believe, as most people in Lake County do, and probably most people in DOC, that there would be no decision being made regarding borrowing $22 million to build this prison if not for one action by one family, and that was a so-called gift of 40 acres to DOC. That's not the entire prison site. An additional 90 was purchased at least full market price. The owner that gave that land does not live in Lake County, but does own 700 acres adjacent to that, what we call a gift. Prior to this gifting action, Reno odds makers would have shown about a 100-1 against constructing this prison for several obvious reasons. One, the DOC prison siting guidelines at the time called for a minimum of 30,000 population for a community to successfully absorb a 400-inmate minimum security facility. Lake County only has 7,000 total population, with about 2,500 in Lakeview proper. There are very, very limited opportunities in Lakeview for job-related community interaction for these inmates, and it's a major thrust of such facility. And if built, these inmates would compete for those necessary jobs for local people. Three, a new greenfield facility in this distant location would be expensive to build, staff, maintain, and supply forever. And comments about geothermal are at this point very tentative, and I'm afraid it has more public relations value than actual value. Four voters have registered their dislike for a prison in Lake County on not one, but two separate ballot measures. It's impossible for a rural rancher to discover what actually motivated DOC to sweep into Lake County behind a small reg of local politicians and retail merchants, but there has been a heavy majority of voters that do not want the prison. It just brings up comments of what we read in the Oregonian about what went on with the Snake River construction project with very loose project management, cost overruns and delays and that sort of thing. We feel a rush to get this prison back into the process might need a second look. Let me return to the countywide prison-related ballot measures, because as I called most of your offices last week, your staff people expressed surprise that the majority of voters in Lake County were not salivating over having a prison in their county. The details of the ballot measures are as follows. There was an advisory ballot that said, do you approve of a private minimum security prison in or near your precinct?
Can you tell me what dates those ballots?
That was 96, I believe.
Okay.
That vote was 1,300 to 840-something. And the second one, I believe, was like 97 or 98. Should local governments be required to gain approval of voters before entering into agreements with DOC to place a prison in Lake County? That vote was yes, 1,879, no, 891. I bring this up to point out that although you've heard that everybody in Lake County wants it, at general elections, countywide general elections, we voted negatively on two different occasions, and that feeling continues to be at least that strong. And many of you have been contacted by hired lobbyists, a few Lakeview politicians, and ex-Lake County commissioners. As a result, it's reasonable to suspect that you may be operating under misinterpretation that a majority of the citizens of Lake County want this prison, and that we're so selfish we want the financially strapped state to borrow $21 million plus $2 to $3 million to service debt for a couple of years. The majority of voters in Lake County know a prison will cost us too much in sociological change, as well as drain off funds badly needed elsewhere. We've said so with our votes. In addition to the two ballot measures, we've put every county commissioner who got us sliding down this path out of office. They have either been voted out or chose to avoid that embarrassment by not running when their terms expired. Bob Perdue, Kit Collins of the Land Gift family, Bill Berry, and Jane O'Keefe are all ex-commissioners. I suspect some of them have recently been lobbying you as though they represent our county. They represent themselves. In addition, we voted out Marcus Ward from the position of district attorney, largely because his response was so suous when he was questioned why he and the then sitting board ignored the vote of the people and went ahead with these negotiations. If all our votes in these general elections do not carry the message to you that placing this project on hold is desired, maybe the hurrah you'll hear all the way to Salem from Lake County when you make that decision might convince you. I don't know what else to say. But one final issue, and it's not personal, it's factual. John Collins, a large construction contractor, gave 40 of his 700-plus acres outside Lakeview to DOC. Kit Collins, his sister-in-law, was on the county board at the time and pushed the issue relentlessly and still does. Portland attorney Dan O'Leary, ex-commissioner Collins' cousin, lobbied for the prison siting here in Salem. And also Lakeview has announced that it would accept a $2.9 million loan from an unnamed private source to cover 2 years of debt service, essentially borrowing money to pay interest on borrowed money, on a bet that everything will be hunky-dory in a couple of years. This loan would be backed by us taxpayers that don't know to whom we owe it. That motivation is easy to understand for financial gain. What we don't understand is how the governor's support a couple of weeks ago fell in on this. I'm a small rancher. I have no idea. But at that level of this political game, I can only guess. I mean, does Geldwin want it or Nike or something like that? I don't know. Geldwin does own two facilities in the county. They own a bank and they own a title service. And they would both stand to gain by having a flow of tax dollars money. But that's... I have no idea how the governor became interested in this. But please, think over how we got to this point, and please take the safe and responsible action to put this project back on hold and give it some more scrutiny. If you recognize the need to improve taxpayer confidence in the state's fiscal responsibility, it's an obvious decision to make. And I hope I've made it clear to you that by a 2-to-1 margin, the taxpayers of Lake County are not salivating to get this prison put on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andrew.
Jerry?
To the Public Safety Committee, Public Safety Subcommittee Chairman and Rob Partridge. My name is Jerry Dunbar. I have lived in Lakeview for 59 years, and I am a log truck driver. When Representative Gilman visited our town in April 12, 03, I spoke about what the majority of the people wanted. He said to me, "How do I know you speak for the majority of the people?" Which I told him that if he wanted an opinion poll, I would get one. I have that right here. I put out an opinion poll stating, "Do you want any kind of prison near Lakeview?" These were put out in some businesses, so to see what the people would say. The poll was out for 4 working days, and then I picked them up, and the results was, and this is an error, I see 6-4, I printed this last night. I picked up another paper this morning, it's 6.9-1 in this packet. Against the prison. This should tell you that it is not just a few people down here protesting, but the majority. Representative Gilman also said that if this conflict kept up, he was afraid that this community would self-destruct, and that worried him very much. The town was also cautioned by Representative Gilman about borrowing money and making agreements with the Department of Corrections. As far as the infrastructure goes, I am sure that it could be used in a more positive way to really help the community, either for private business or community purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunbar.
To the Public Safety Subcommittee, Chairman Rob Patridge. My name is Diana Adams. My mother's family has been in Lake County raising horses and cattle since the 1870s. Today, we have just driven 6 hours and 375 miles from Lakeview to Salem. And I did this because I want to express my concerns about the Warner Creek Prison. It would be the most expensive prison to maintain because of distance and lack of services in Lakeview. Our 911, dispatch / ambulance, and fire department services are each staffed by one trained salaried employee. The backup staff consists of 25 volunteers. These services would have to hire more paid staff to cover the needs of the prison. Our local police, sheriff's department, district attorney, courts, county road department, drug and alcohol counseling, and mental health services will all need to be expanded, costing the local and county taxpayers more money. We currently have 2 state troopers in our 8,000 square mile county. We do need jobs and industry in Lake County. We have a trained labor force for wood products and manufacturing jobs. Bobby Burton of the DOC Community Coordinator stated, "No preference would be given for local people seeking employment at the prison." At the Lake County Commissioners' Work Session on April 15, 2003. Our county needs to attract private enterprise with a tax incentive package. Currently, 80% of our labor force already work for a tax-supported public agency or district. Another bureaucracy coming to town with a prison labor force will impact the balance of jobs available. The DOC will contract with all the federal, state, county, and town agencies to employ prison crews at the expense of private citizens seeking summer jobs and contracts. It is my understanding that the use of the geothermal resource is being touted as an asset to offset the extra expense of heating the prison. However, it is a long way from being a certainty. Currently, the geothermal resource is in litigation before the Oregon Water Resources Board. An environmental impact study involving the neighbors, businesses, and agricultural hot water wells needs to be conducted. The cloudy title of geothermal heat ownership needs to be determined. Just delay this decision on the Lakeview Prison until the costs and benefits can be thoroughly analyzed instead of thoroughly publicized. And as you can see, other citizens feel as strongly as I do. And some of them are here today, but there are many others who simply could not take time off from work to be here. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Adams. Further questions for the panel? Thank you. We appreciate you driving all the way over.
Thank you for having
me. Patridge, come to Lakeview and visit the site.
All right. The Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors, Marie Hill, Abe Huntley, Roy Wright, and Richard Sly. And the next panel is going to be Dave Burwright, Rob Gordon, Pat Detloff, Rod Clark, Bob Wolf, and Janet Clements.
Mm-hmm. Chair Patridge, members of the committee. My name is Marie Hill. I'm the Community Justice Director in Josephine County, and I'm also currently the President of the Oregon Association for Community Corrections Directors. We will attempt to be brief. We understand we want to have plenty of time for the sheriffs participating to have testimony also. The Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors unanimously supports the local control, supervision, treatment, and sanctioning of offenders. Since the passage of Senate Bill 1145, we have implemented policy practice consistent with local demographics and criminal justice policies and values. There are 45,000 offenders currently being supervised in Oregon. Nearly 30,000 of those offenders are felons. Since the implementation of Senate Bill 1145, local counties have recognized the value of community corrections and, wherever possible, have contributed to the cost of community corrections. Today, counties contribute nearly 25% of the total cost. But now we find ourselves on the brink of dismantling community corrections, and should state funding not be restored, we will lose the ability to leverage those local county resources as counties begin to opt out. This equates to multiplying the negative effect to community safety. There are currently three options in response to the community corrections funding's reductions proposed: individual counties opting out, the repeal of the act, and a revision of the state sentencing guidelines in effect to reduce workload commensurate with the funding level. The proposed guidelines revisions would equate to no probation supervision for the following crimes: possession of controlled substance, theft 1, identity theft, burglary 2, attempt to elude, and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. We recognize that these three responses are not consistent with sound criminal justice practice. However, counties at the proposed level of reduction will no longer be able to even close to adequately supervise those folks who we are charged to supervise, and workload must be reduced. It is our opinion that the proposed reductions puts the criminal justice system at extreme imbalance, and 25% reduction is not sustainable. Community Corrections Directors urge restoration of funds. Here with me to speak about the specifics are Richard Sly from Yamhill County, Roy Wright from Coos County, and Ed Huntley from Jackson County. Thank you.
Thank you. Ed?
Representative Park Patridge, members of the community. My name is Abe Huntley with Jackson County Community Corrections. In 1995, the lawmakers of Oregon embarked on a grand experiment in the passage of Senate Bill 1145. This bill has funded counties to manage community corrections or parole and probation services, as well as all offenders sentenced to prison of 12 months or less. The task of carrying out this bill fell upon the professionals in the field and throughout the state, who spend each day providing for public safety through the management and supervision of criminal offenders in our community and in our local jails. With much effort and over many years, counties have done more than just make it work. Counties have created partnerships, programs, and services that have not only served our offenders and communities, but these programs also served as models for communities throughout the country. Some of the examples in Jackson County would include specialized sex offender supervision and treatment not only in the community but also in our local jail, specialized treatment and supervision of domestic violence offenders and their victims, bringing programs of education, alcohol and drug treatment, cognitive restructuring into our jails, specialized supervision and treatment of high-risk women offenders, creation of a 60-bed work center in which sanctioned offenders work on work crews in the community during the day and receive treatment at night, providing them with job skills and saving the taxpayers of Jackson County hundreds of thousands of dollars. These are examples of programs and services that have worked in Jackson County, and each county can come up with their own examples of programs that have been successful. The proposed cuts to community corrections will turn the clock back to 1995 and beyond. We respectfully urge you to restore community corrections funding so that we can continue the great work that has been accomplished. If this is impossible, we ask for a change in policy to decrease the workload. We thank you for your time.
Thank you, Abe.
Chairman, members, my name is Roy Wright. I'm the director of Coos County Community Corrections.
And following on what Marie and Abe have said, one of the alternatives to having our community corrections funding restored is to reduce supervision of certain types of cases, including PCS. What I've given you is a document that I asked my probation officers to prepare in Coos County in February of this year to put down some successes that they had had recently, just a snapshot of people. But rather than get into that, I would just like to say that if you look inside, you will see a little mark in front of snapshot cases. All of those people would not be supervised if PCS was eliminated from supervision. This is just Coos County's story, and there are thousands of these stories throughout the state. And the point I'd like to make is simply that parole and probation services are effective, and that if PCS was not supervised, 30 of the 61 people in that document would not be supervised, and that includes 22 families. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is my turn. Chairman Patridge and members of the committee. Good afternoon, Senator George. My name is Richard Sly, and I'm from Yamhill County. I'm the director of the Yamhill County Community Corrections Program. I think my good partners here from the various parts of the state have spoken very well to this situation. My point is that I would urge the committee to look at community corrections, if you will, as the other branch of the criminal justice system. You've heard from the folks in Baker County and the mild division of opinion from Lake County about prison deaths. In Oregon, about three-quarters of the felony offenders are individuals that are on community supervision. These are folks that have been to prison and are now being supervised in the community. And the department has set aside quite a sum of money for that very process. It's kind of like a riparian area in ecology. It's that delicate part between the water and the land. And when people leave the closed community of the prison and go to the open community, they need plenty of supports. Community corrections provides supervision. A part of that is surveillance. It provides sanctions, and it provides opportunities for people to change. I think if community corrections were to go away, and I thought the item that you handed out, your spreadsheet, was a very good item for discussion because it really made us think about what the system would look like absent community supervision. And it's interesting, a lot of the crimes that are mentioned here today are the ones that the drug offenders utilize, identity theft, there's home invasion, those types of crimes. Those folks who have drug offenses that are placed on probation, which is the most often used sentence by the courts, are very receptive to treatment and change. And so we believe that that would be good, if you will, for the health of Oregon, because I think we don't just deal with criminal justice issues. We deal with the youngster that is in a home where both mom and dad are users, and when those kids go to school, they go to school hungry and sometimes upset. When they get to be in their teen years, they can cause a lot of havoc in the community. Community Corrections does a good job of collecting lots of urine samples and helping sanction those folks for brief periods of time so they can go back and be productive in the community. It has an impact on your health system at the local level because a lot of these folks, because they neglect their health and they don't eat and they're susceptible to infectious diseases, that's a big cost to the community. So I would join my fellows here and urge the committee to fund community corrections adequately. Thank you.
Thank you, all four of you. Is there anything further?
I did see somebody else from one of the counties. I don't know if that was part of your group or not, from Multnomah County. Different issue. Okay. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you much for your time.
Okay. I'm going to take the sheriff's group, Dave Burright, Rob Gordon, Pat Detloff, Rod Clark, Bob Wolf, and Jan Clements next on deck. I think these, let me know if you're not, Mark Royal, Kate Ward, and Roy Wright, are you all those people have indicated they're from more than 100 miles, and so we'll take you, that group up next.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Subcommittee on Public Safety, my name is Dave Burright. I'm the Linn County Sheriff, and I'm also co-chairman of the Legislative Committee of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And today, I, along with my colleagues, would like to provide testimony on the community corrections portion of the Department of Corrections budget. Community corrections has quite a long history. In fact, it started in the state on about 1977, and I was involved in Linn County from the very start as a young deputy point on the first community corrections committee in our county, and was involved off and on throughout the years until the point when I became sheriff in 1995, and that's actually just prior to that, I was also attending meetings in the in then Attorney General Ted Kulongoski's office, where Senate Bill 1145 was really spawned, if you will. And it was created as a result in reaction to Measure 11. It was passed, and also Measure 17, if that's the mandatory work measure back in those days, passed by the citizens of this state. And the problem that was quickly recognized and really put people in this building in a tailspin was the cost, the tremendous cost the state would incur in housing those, especially the Measure 11 offenders. And so Senate Bill 1145 was created. And there were a lot of motives for that bill, and a lot of very good ones, too. People that very truly believed that at the local level we could manage this particular population that we're talking about in a more effective manner. But there was another motivation, too, and that was money. Because, as I said, the state was faced with a huge financial burden. And I will never, ever forget Governor Kitzhaber at that time when he was pushing this this bill, when it was first getting going, in his speeches, talking about the fact that if the state were forced to pay for Measure 11 by itself, it would destroy the infrastructure of the state. Those are his exact words, destroy the infrastructure of the state. And I was very concerned. I was one of the people that was very vocally against 1145 at the time, and it was because of the money issue. And I was very concerned that, and I was very vocal about the fact that, folks, you know, when it comes to the point where if the state gets in a big financial bind themselves, what's going to happen to the local people, the counties? And I was also concerned that the people that were making the promises at the time, in all good faith, no question about that, but many of those folks would be gone. And that is actually the case that we now find ourselves in. Many of the folks that were in this building at that time now gone on to other activities, and we find ourselves in a situation in the state even worse than any of us could have imagined. As part of the reassurance that we wouldn't have this problem, built into the bill was the opt-out clause. And that was to be a reassurance to the counties that the state would not do this to the counties. That we, and I don't think that anyone, as I said, in their wildest dreams thought that we'd be here, but here we are now. So here we sit today, and no matter how you do the math, we're somewhere around $40 million, about $40 million short of taking care of this problem. And to say that the Sheriff's Association, and I think I feel confident in speaking for community corrections directors and boards of commissioners, to say that we were thunderstruck when that dollar figure first appeared in the governor's budget would be a vast understatement, because we had no idea where that number came from. The magnitude of it was overwhelming. And the problem, one of the many problems, was that the total disconnect between policy and what was right, what we ought to be doing, and the workload and the budget. And no one had ever asked the practitioners how this dollar amount came about. In fact, we found out later it was simply a roll-up. It was we heard this from DAS, that it was the December revenue shortfall forecast of $2.4 million, the $7 million that was across-the-board cut given to everyone that was in Senate Bill 5100, and when 5100, the Measure 28 then, failed, those were rolled up into the next 2 years and came upon us in the figure of $40 million. But again, the disconnect that you've already heard the community corrections directors talk about in the workload and what that means to us. As you know, really the only realistic option that the county has have with this kind of budget reduction is an opt-out of the program. And I don't know of a single sheriff. I don't know of a single community corrections director. I have never spoken to a member of a board of commissioner who wants to do that. I think you're aware from me being around the last couple of weeks in your hearings that Linn County has chosen to do that, but it wasn't without a great deal of anguish and a huge amount of soul-searching that we finally do it. But it was a matter of the point where we can no longer pay our bills if this kind of cut comes to us. This is no different than if at back home at the county jail, if when Pacific Power and Light sends me the power bill at the end of each month, if I tell them, gosh, I can't quite pay you. It's, you know, I'm only going to pay you 80% or I'm going to pay you 75%. You know what PP&L would do to me. They cut my power. And unfortunately, that's what we don't, where we don't want to be, but it's where we find ourselves. The thing that is critical is that this is a situation that we cannot do nothing before you adjourn. This is a problem that we have to come up with an option to do something to fix it, because the consequences are so dire. The system's on the verge of collapse without some kind of an option to fix it. We're only aware of three options. One is to use savings from other programs or new revenue or some other funding to backfill the community corrections program so that we can continue to run it. A second option that Chairman Patridge is aware of is a group that's been working through Craig Campbell and the governor's office trying to decide, okay, if the money is cut, then how do we reduce the services, you know, cut people, parole probation officers, jail beds, whatever the case may be, to match the number of dollars. This is no different than the Oregon Health Plan. As it's been sliced, we didn't ask the doctors in the hospitals to continue to pay for the services. We cut the amount of services they were expected to render. You've heard some talk about that today. The problem is, to do that, it cuts so severely into the number of crimes that we would no longer supervise that it's truly frightening. As we've sat in the committee meetings, we've sat and talked among ourselves saying we can't believe we're even talking about this. But that is an option, and if push comes to shove, perhaps that's a policy decision that would have to be made. But it would definitely be a policy decision. And the third possible option, and is one that has been the Oregon State Sheriff's Association has a bill introduced that's still alive, is to repeal the Community Corrections Act and take it back to the moment in 1995 prior to Senate Bill 1145, back when the counties voluntarily participated at varying levels in the act. With that, I'll just let you know that it has not been easy in Linn County to make the decision on the opt-out. One of the reasons we've done it now is because of the 180-day waiting period. We already are into next fiscal year, and so in order to try to stop the bleeding, if nothing was nothing happened, that's why we've done it. Today I passed out a copy of an article that appeared in our local newspaper shortly after that happened. Also, there's a letter. Since Marion County, I don't think we'll have the opportunity to talk today. I hope you do allow them to come back later. But they have now also forwarded an opt-out notice to the Department of Corrections. And Sheriff Clements from Linn County is here also. We'll be talking about that from their own county's perspective. And so with that, I appreciate your time, and I'll turn the mic over to Sheriff Rob Gordon.
Thanks, Dave. Dave came on behalf of the Sheriff's Association, too, before during the main part of the budget. So I'm going to, if you guys can limit your comments, believe me, the committee knows about the whole 1145. We've identified it. We've all talked to the co-chairs. We understand what a huge, huge issue it would be. And frankly, I doubt the legislature nor the governor would have the political courage to decriminalize things that happen out there, nor do I think we want to transfer that back to the county. So with that caveat from the chair, you know, but I don't get to print the money either, so.
Okay. You do, we can see you.
With that, I will be very brief. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Rob Gordon. I'm the sheriff of Washington County. I'd like to give a quick overview of the jail situation in Oregon. The sheriffs in Oregon operate 33 county jail systems. We have today about 7,200 prisoners in custody, and we will receive about 192,000 new prisoners each year after this. Our job is to house pretrial prisoners and sentence prisoners. Our sentence population includes a good number of state prisoners, 1145 prisoners, which you know. what you don't probably know is that 22 of our 33 jails are releasing people either before they should be released on pre-trial status or in a, before their sentence has expired. This translates into over 25,000 local inmates coming into our communities, your communities, each and every year. Those are important numbers to keep in mind when you consider cutting these or reducing these community corrections funds. That number will grow as the courts come back into sessions and the PD office is funded again. With that, I'll pass to Sheriff Detloff.
Thank you, Sheriff Ward.
Mr. Chair and members of the Subcommittee on Public Safety, my name is Pat Detloff. I'm the Sheriff of Clackamas County. And I just wanted to make a few comments relative really to Clackamas County and not the state as a whole. In Clackamas County, the 1145 monies that are received are utilized by community corrections. They also receive some general fund support. I do not utilize any 1145 dollars in the specific operation of the Sheriff's Office, particularly in our jail. It's interesting to note that on average, we have about 63 1145 inmates held within our facility at any one time. Doing the math and the cost of bed space to house those facilities, those people, it ends up being about $2.3 million that I subsidize out of my budget every year to house 1145 inmates. This is a great concern. I think that the at least I can speak, I think, for the rest of the counties as well as our operation, that we have stepped up well, I think, in this partnership with the state to do what we're all trying to do, and that's provide community safety in each of our respective communities and provide that as best we can. I would urge you and the rest of your colleagues within the legislature to, if you can in any way, shape, or fashion, to restore the $40 million cut that was as a result of Senate Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff Detloff.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sheriff Rod Clark from Crook County. Prior to Senate Bill 1145 in Crook County, community corrections was a regional activity. There was no local in-county supervision of that operation. There was a supervisor who came around periodically. Since 1996, when that's been in Crook County's direct responsibility, recidivism and abscond rates have gone down significantly in Crook County. In other words, we are being successful with the program as it has been being run. We, however, are releasing more prisoners due to recent cuts of Senate Bill 50, House Bill 5100, and the results of that. We continue to release prisoners. With proposed funding cuts, as they now stand, more prisoners will be released into the community without any rehabilitation type of effort being done. What does that mean? What's the bottom line to that? The bottom line to that is we have people in the community that are making the community less safe for the citizens. What does less safe mean to us? Well, we all know about the economic situation of the state of Oregon. And if we have a place that's less safe for people to come and do business here in Oregon, how is that going to affect potential or economic recovery? More criminals in the street without proper rehabilitation, proper programs to go through, put them back into useful society, only make this society in Oregon a place that I wouldn't want to bring my business to. We cannot continue community corrections at the county level without adequate funding. Well, just what is adequate funding, you might ask? I think that's a reasonable question that I have to ask. When 1145 was originally put together, there were certain assumptions that were made. One of those assumptions, amongst others, was that there would be a 75-25 split, 75 in jail, 25 under supervision at a given time. Actual practice has proven out closer to 90-10. Therein lies one of the problems already about what is adequate funding. Do we have adequate funding before the cuts? And certainly not before the proposed cuts. We in Crook County, I think, are pretty good. Our farmers, our ranchers, our loggers are pretty good at mending things, repairing things. Excuse me, fixing things with baling wire or even duct tape. It works pretty well when you're in a panic and a hurt and you got to get something going again. But I'm afraid, folks, baling wire and duct tape aren't going to do us any good in this case. The only place we're going to do any good is to have some funding restored to the programs that are working for the citizens of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Bob Wolf. I'm the sheriff of Polk County. And I'm going to be really brief. I'm just going to basically give you the facts as to what's happened to Polk County since this $40 million reduction has come out. I've already been through budget hearings for Polk County, and our budget is already showing that come July 1, out of 12 parole and probation officers, we'll be reduced to 9, and out of 15, or out of 17 patrol deputies, I'm going to be reduced to 15. That's going to be a significant impact on Polk County. We're very fortunate living on the other side of the river from a large county such as Marion, but we're starting to see more and more of the actions of the people from Marion County showing up over in Polk County. And with this reduction, there's just simply no way that we're going to be able to keep up with this. And Polk County has still not considered the opt-out clause, but they are starting to look at it a little more seriously now, waiting to find out what comes out of the final budget numbers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Patridge and members of the committee, I won't be redundant with the relationship between the state and counties that was characterized as a partnership. The projections for Lane County were that the average daily population of Senate Bill 1145 inmates given to local control for custody was 132. Our experience in 2002 has been an average for all months of 207 offenders in custody. In fiscal year 02...
Jan, can you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Sheriff Jan Clements, Lane County. My apologies.
Go ahead.
In fiscal year 01-02, I've had to deauthorize 10 corrections deputies' positions, which resulted in a reduction of a 35-bed intake center and closure of our special management unit, which, with the degradation of services from the state in the mental health area, alcohol and drug treatment, and the like, is absolutely critical for me. The special management unit addresses issues of mental health, detoxification, as well as suicide watches. Presently, I'm releasing unsupervised domestic batterers, chronic methamphetamine cooks, and manufacturers of drugs, as well as burglars and auto thieves. The proposed Lane County budget, because of general fund shortfalls, calls for me to lay off 8 more corrections deputies, which will result in an 84-bed closure. Total reductions amount to over 26% of the total beds that are available in the system. And that is before we are due to receive an additional $2 million cut per year. Supervision and treatment as well is suffering. Because of this, Lane County, the Board of County Commissioners tomorrow will consider, and I believe support, giving the required 180-day notice as required to the state of our intent to opt out of Senate Bill 1145. I very seriously regret that this has become necessary. The lofty goal of localized community corrections, providing an intelligent and effective continuum of transitional services, rests precariously upon the state fulfilling its commitment to local jurisdictions. Unfortunately, the prospect of maintaining credible accountability of offenders and a measure of public safety is crumbling before our very eyes in Lane County. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff Clements. Questions for the Sheriff's panel? Representative Hansen.
Not really a question, just a real quick statement. I was a county commissioner involved with the negotiations with the state on 1145. And very clearly, the way you've portrayed it and portrayed the agreement and stuff is very much on the money. The assumption was that, and there was a lot of interest in the counties in pursuing it, because there was a feeling counties could do a better job with this subsection of offenders. Before 1145, there was a real revolving door with the state penitentiary that people were going in for very short periods of time, coming back out, not really impacted changing their conduct. I think 1145 has worked. It's produced really good results. But the assumption was always this was a state responsibility, and the state should pay the counties to do it. And that's why the opt-out was put in. And clearly the state's not, during the period, I mean, there's always been discussions what what's the right amount of money. Counties have always felt they were underpaid. I think they've always been underpaid, but to their merit, they've subsidized 1145 over virtually its whole length of time, certainly in Multnomah County. There's the feeling we subsidized it. Anyway, I think you've hit the nail right on the head. About $40 million short, and an opt-out should be something that every county should be very seriously looking at. I don't think that's an improvement in public safety. I hope we don't have to go there, but I think it's real clear that you can't, in this economic environment, you can't ask counties to pick up a $40 million or pay for $40 million of state responsibility. So it's another budget hole.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just I know that every county situation is unique and different. And I too was a county commissioner when the 1145 opportunity came along. I guess my concern then becomes what happens with the facilities that the state has certificates of participation outstanding on, and what we're going to be able, how we're best going to be able to utilize those facilities within the counties. And this presents a whole different and unique set of circumstances that we'll just have to address as we go along. But I am concerned that the original premise, and that was that a local prisoner under 13 months, 12 months or less of stay, was better housed locally and better managed locally to transition back within the communities. And I am concerned now as to what happens with regard to the original capital infusion that we put in through certificates of participation.
All right. Thank you, Representative Butler.
Further questions
from the panel? All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Royal, Kate Ward, and Roy Wright. I need to know if there's anyone else either who came from over 100 miles. Nobody's raising their hand. I don't see anyone jumping up. So we will try and deal with the next groups as we can.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Royal. I'm Umatilla County and Morrill County Community Corrections Director. And also, really, I come to speak also in regards to our local Alcohol and Drug Planning Committee, of which I sit as chair. Today, I support Community Corrections Director in our request for asking for restoration of the funds available to Community Corrections. And if that's not possible, then a reduction in workload proportionately. Also, though, really I come as my concern is for the treatment aspect or the human aspect of treatment of offenders. And in our county, we have a firm commitment to our alcohol and drug treatment of these individuals. And our committee, the Local Alcohol and Drug Planning Committee, supports that very strongly. With that, I think that I would like to introduce Kate Ward. Kate Ward is with Umatilla County Mental Health and provides our coordination of treatment activities on site. First, I met Kate Ward as her probation officer, so, I mean, there's a real story here to be told. So, Kate, would you take over?
My name's Kate Ward. I'm a treatment services coordinator in Umatilla County. I am very nervous because the only other hearing I've ever been to in my whole life, I got sentenced. So now that I have that out of the way, actually the reason why I agreed to come here was to give you an opportunity to hear a different part of the story, a truth part. And I really hope that you'll be able to fully understand what it is I'm saying, the effectiveness of supervision with programming. What are the results? What are the possibilities? Well, the fact that I am not distributing and manufacturing methamphetamine in your community or any community in Oregon or any other state is specifically a direct result of the combined supervision as well as mandatory programming that I got in Umatilla County. Plus, I don't have any more possessions. And as I'm listening to this, it kind of scares me. I've got two feelings. The little criminal over here is saying, oh, why didn't I wait? Because I wouldn't have had to do time or anything on my possessions. But thank God I did, or I'd be dead. By all studies that they do in schools and stuff, I was not one of those high-risk kids to ever enter the drug world. I graduated from high school in Baker. I was in 4-H. I graduated a college, and I was a nurse for 11 years, responsible member of the community, mom. And then at some point, drugs entered my life, and that wasn't exciting enough, and so drugs and crime entered my life. As you can see on the third page that I've attached here, there's my criminal offenses. And on there is possession of controlled substance, not once, but more than once. I've been in the Department of Corrections system twice. The very first time that I was in the system, I didn't get any programming. Nothing changed in my life. The people I hung around with didn't change. And so within a year after being off of supervision, I entered back into the same world that the Department of Corrections tried to get me out of. Those pictures that were just passed around, why on earth would somebody want to blow those up and have other people see them? The first one, the one in orange, that was the beginning of the end for me. That's my mugshot. And the second one is a year and a half later, and as you can see, nothing changed for the better other than my location. And even though, as you heard the sheriffs and Department of Corrections say earlier, my charges were not high-risk offenses, I was considered a high-risk offender, obviously, since I reoffended. These are only the things I got caught doing, so there's a lot more other offenses that could be out there, but not in the past however many years.
Safe.
Anyway, okay. When I came to Umatilla County, which is that March 96 picture, by August of 1996, I couldn't do that anymore. But I couldn't remember how to get out. I couldn't remember how to be a nurse, how to be a mom. I'd lost my kids. I didn't even know where my daughters were at that time. They were somewhere in Pocatello with their dad, which wasn't a good situation either, but at some point I thought that would be better than being with me, when the choice I should have made was to give up my drug and criminal world and been a mom. That's not the choice I made at that time. I had no support system there, and so the only people I knew were other drug people and other offenders. I'm not sure if they were offenders yet. They probably were. I just didn't pay any attention. Anyway, by about August of 1996, I wanted out of the drug world in one of two ways. Either send me to prison to do the 4 years that I was originally sentenced to do, because my thinking at that time was, if I could just get out of it and get away from it for a period of time, I might do okay. The other thing was, I was an IV methamphetamine user. I am really nervous.
You're fine.
Okay. The only other way, I had another plan, and that was heroin. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do two hits of heroin. One to see what the big deal is, and the other to get out, because heroin I could go out fairly comfortably. But I didn't want my kids left with that legacy, and thank goodness that I was on supervision in a community and not just in prison. I could have snuck away with it in prison. Who cares? But I had a probation officer. My sanction was treatment. It was to go to detox, enter and successfully complete, which I still quite haven't done, but I did stay clean. Anyway, enter and successfully complete treatment. After I did that, I became a contributing member of society again. That's when this took place. This newspaper article was in September 1977. I was just over a year clean. This one is 2 months later, I had found my daughters, and I got to be with them for the first time in 4 years. I didn't think that I would do this here. I've told the story a time or two. Anyway,
you're doing fine.
I was still on probation here. I was still on probation there. I know that the community programs that I did, at whatever level I did them, they had to have saved money. I heard one of the people say that it costs, what, $63? I don't think it costs that much to supervise somebody. Plus, I was paying taxes. Being mandated into those programs, as I've told you, it literally saved my life. I was finished. And ultimately, it gave my kids back their mom. I have four. I didn't use my note cards. Anyway, I want you to understand, I'm not coming here talking to you as a treatment provider. I am not. That just happens to be where I am. I'm talking to you as I've seen a lot of people in the past 4 years that have been able to be successful by actually getting more programming than what I got 5-6 years ago. I know for a fact that Community Corrections collaborating with treatment at the community level does in fact change lives, and it saved my life. Provided me with the necessary support structure. I heard somebody else say that, you know, I think it was Powder River, about the support structure in the community. If you're there standing all alone in a new lifestyle, what are you going to do? It's scary. You go back to somebody you know. I know the effectiveness of an offender participating in programs. These programs, at least at our level, have already been compromised. I'm already having to turn offenders away and say, sorry, I don't have a program for you. For some of us, these programs were our very last hope. The very last hope. Supervision without programming didn't work for me. It didn't work for my kids. But let me show you what it did do. Supervision with programming gave me this. This is the one and only family portrait that I have, and it was just done last month. This is what your funding gave me, and I'm not the only one. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. It definitely helps us put perspective on what we have to do at a more personal level. As somebody who was a drug prosecutor for a couple of years.
You wouldn't have liked me very much.
Oh, no, I dealt with lots of people like that who actually did make a difference and who we've seen later on be able to do things, so we certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
All right. We've still got a whole bunch of people on the list. The AOC people, we've had sheriffs, we've had community corrections providers. You guys are farther down on the list now. Nikki, sorry. But I don't know if you guys want to do it at a specific time. We're going to do some other people on invited testimony on Wednesday is the day that we're going to do it. So I give you that option because we've got about two pages of people who signed up ahead of you guys. 1 o'clock. So why don't you guys coordinate and figure out how you want to deal with that from the county's perspective, and we have Ann Wilson, Bridget Cerati, Kathleen Pequeño, Patty Katz, and Ken Layton.
Chairman Patridge, members of the committee, my name is Ann Wilson, and I'm from Salem. I'm a recent WIX graduate at the Coffee Creek facility, and I'm also on parole. I'm here today to ask you to continue the funding for the programs that are in the prisons. I'm living proof that these programs work, and I'm also living proof that if there's no programs available, people are just going to keep coming back. I was a three-time loser. I'd been to prison three times. And this last time, the only thing that changed was I was able to get into this WICS program. I have, scores of identity thefts behind me, drug charges, all kinds of things that people had given up on me, and I had given up on myself. But once I got into this program, the program got inside me and changed me from the inside. They did testing. They tested to see what kind of aptitude I had, what kind of opportunities are available for me. And I not only was able to go into that program and see who I really was, I was able to get out and start to contribute to society. As of right now, I work full-time for a mortgage company. I go to college full-time. I'm Phi Theta Kappa. I never thought that would ever happen. I've started to realize some of my dreams. I've gone skydiving. I've started a skydiving club at the college. I do volunteer work, and I'm giving back to society for the things that I've done wrong. And none of that would have been possible if I hadn't gone through this program. It costs less now for me to be on supervision, which I'm almost off of, than it did to prosecute me, to house me. It was just warehousing me. Nothing was being done. I didn't know what resources I had when I got out. I didn't know where to turn when I got out. The only people I knew were the criminals before I came in. I don't have any family. I didn't have anything. But this program gave me a mentor, gave me people to turn to, showed me what resources I had out there, and it made me realize the things that I could do. The people that are in prison right now, if they don't have a chance to get into a program that's going to change them, they're just going to keep coming back. They won't know anything else. I have my whole thing written out here, and I'm not even going by it. I understand that Oregon is in a financial crisis, and I understand that cuts need to be made, but it doesn't make sense to cut the programs that are going to help these people change. My time in prison actually means something this time. I thank God that I went to prison, because I wouldn't be where I am today. I'm not on any kind of public assistance. I'm paying taxes. God, those paychecks just... you wouldn't believe it. I've paid my debt to society. I've done that by the law books. But now I'm giving back. I can't find each individual person that I've done wrong to. I wish I could, but I can't. But what I can do is I can give back to society, and I can help. My profession that I've chosen is I'm going to go into occupational therapy so that I can help, I can help people. And if I hadn't had this program, I wouldn't be able to do that. And it's not just that one program. There's programs that are needed all over. And I can't say enough about the programs and what's going to happen if they're, they have been cut. And, it's just, there's a whole different life if you're able to change your life. And, I thank you for your time and consideration in this matter. And I welcome any questions you have. And if you have any further questions in the future, my contact information is on the bottom of my written testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson.
Chair Patridge and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Bridget Sarabi, and I'm a spokesperson for the Oregon Criminal Justice Reform Coalition. I'm also the survivor of a violent crime, and I have a child who's a survivor of a violent crime. So I take the issues of offender accountability very seriously. We had many people who wanted to come today who were not able to take off the time from work. So with my testimony, there's testimony from 10 others who particularly wanted to support maintaining alcohol and drug education and other programs within the prisons. I've also submitted the testimony of three people who did take off work today but realized they would not be able to testify and they cannot return on Wednesday. So I've submitted that also. I'm going to try and cut my remarks down to the essentials. Many people here will speak about the programs. I'd just like to point out that, as Anne said, a couple of times when she was in prison, there were no programs. There were not enough. As it is, we do not have enough programs to serve all of the offenders. We heard Mr. Taylor last week say that 55% of Oregon inmates are functionally illiterate, but we are now only able to serve two-thirds of them. 80% need substance abuse treatment. The program that was mentioned at Powder River sounds fabulous. We need more, not less, so please try and maintain those. Where do we get the money? That's the million-dollar question. That takes us to the issue of bed capacity. And I would like to start with a simple proposition. In this biennium, it's a time to manage bed capacity, not build. The department has looked at this very carefully. They have said that they could use emergency and temporary beds. I recognize that this makes things very difficult, but it is the most cost-effective thing to do at this time. In addition, there are currently two bills that are before the House that would provide moderate extensions of earned time and transitional leave. If these were passed, and I know they were included in the co-chair's budget, you would free up to 500 beds, according to the testimony we heard last week, which is more than the entire capacity of the Lakeview Prison. In addition, we would save $12 million. Now, it's my understanding that that is a net savings after paying for the community corrections. And I'll just take this as my opportunity to plug community corrections. On behalf of the coalition, we would very much like to see that funding restored. We believe in community-based alternatives. It's more cost-effective. It keeps offenders in the community. Briefly on the Lakeview issue, I would just like to say that at this time, it doesn't make any sense to add to the debt load of this state. Right now, we're paying $100 million each biennium for the debt on prison construction. It hit me the other day that I'm going to be helping to pay this off for the rest of my working career, and that my seventh grade daughter is going to spend the first dozen years of her working career paying off this debt. Now is not the time to add to it. If we need to later, then that's one thing. But right now, in this fiscal crisis, please look at cost savings, look at the earned time and transitional leave, and look at managing the beds we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Patty Katz, and I sit before you as a woman in recovery from heroin addiction and 14 felony convictions. I tell you that not to impress you, but to let you know that treatment works and recovery is possible. Two out of three of my children are in prison. If you use the figures of $30,000 a year to incarcerate an inmate, I would like to thank the state of Oregon for your generous donation of $750,000 for myself and my children to rest up between our drug addiction and before we went out to do it all over again. My children received no correcting in corrections when they were incarcerated before.
We have your written testimony.
Okay.
We're trying to get people off their written testimony, so you can just talk that with
My son has never been in treatment, and he's been incarcerated since he's been 14 years old, on and off, and he finally left the state system, and now he has 8.5 more years to do in federal time. My daughter is in treatment right now, and she's getting ready to come back into the community, and she's healing. And my granddaughter just came out of foster care this weekend, and she goes in for counseling with her mother to a program that's here in Coffee Creek. My family's starting to heal. I don't go to prison anymore. I'm no longer on probation or parole. That's a miracle in my life. I have 27 parole violations. But the last time I was incarcerated, I was able to go to treatment. I got a mentor when I got out of prison. I found clean and sober housing. I had to leave the state to do it at that time. I had to move to Vancouver but and then I was able to go to better people, which helped me understand more of who I was and helped me with accountability with myself. I had I became a VISTA volunteer, and I went from being handcuffed in the back of a Multnomah County car to walking down to the motor pool 14 months later, checking out a Multnomah County car, driving to my appointment as a drug-free workplace coordinator for the Regional Drug Initiative. Miracles have happened, so many that I can't even begin to tell you. I know that without treatment, without support in the community, when we transition out of prison, we die in our disease. I have to tell you that in my recovery, there's been 19 people that I have read about that have died in their disease. Some of them just came out of prison. I don't want that to be my children. Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll notice if you read my testimony, it's one paragraph. I didn't bring.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
Oh yes, I'm sorry. My name is Ken Layton. I'm a resident of Salem, Oregon, and I respect the chair and the committee members. I'm not very formal in my presentation sometimes. I apologize for that. But I did a one paragraph thing because I wanted you to read it. And I also I carry in my wallet a picture. You can keep it or give it back to me. It's at my last arrest, 1977. If you look at it, I would ask you to, if you'd like to meet that person on the streets of your community, you wouldn't. I am a product of the inner city of Los Angeles, California. I did 15 years in the California prisons and 10 and a half years in the Oregon prisons. I'm not going to go through my accomplishments and all I've done since I've got out, but for the last 18 years, if you followed me around every day in the 18 years, you may not like everything I do, but you would be say to yourself, I am glad this person is in my community. I guarantee you that. What I want to talk about is the victims. Like this lady sitting next to me and a lot of other people that I work with currently. I want you to imagine how many victims I created. I quit. I got out of prison in 1986. And I started going to prison in 1956. That's 30 years of criminal behavior with 25 years on. Now, how many victims do you think I am convicted of 5 armed robberies. I did in excess of 50 for sure. I've committed every crime under the sun except sex crimes and murder, and I have shot people in armed robberies and tried to kill them. And what I want to say is, think about the victims. Think about the people that are hurt so badly, like people that are like myself, that you put in prison, justifiably so. I probably should have did more than 25 years in prison, if you want to know the truth. But you put them in prison, you warehouse those people, and you let them out. Anybody, and take manufacturing. If you take a product in your factory, are you going to put it out worse than what it went in? You want to come out with a better product. I know the finances. I got children too. You know, my last child's 19. He's going to Chemeketa Community College. That's being cut. The school funds balance our kids in school against convicts in prison. It's a hard sell. Come on. I know that. You know that. Everybody knows that. But think of the victims. Think of the victims. Man, the only thing that keeps me straight today is because of the treatment that is now defunct in the Oregon State Hospital, the mentally and emotionally disturbed unit that you cut many years ago. And the only thing that keeps me going, and I'm telling you the truth, is I never want to create another person that I intentionally hurt. You did that for me. The legislature, when I came into this state, and the Oregon State Prison was the most forward-reaching, most People come from all over the United States to study it. I'm done. I know I get to rambling. I'm going to cut it off. But think of the victims that are going to be created when you cut treatment. I don't know about you, but when it is cut, whoever cuts it, it's going to create victims in our community. And I mean our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Layton.
Good afternoon, Chair Patridge, the members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Kathleen Pequeño, and I live in Portland, Oregon. You have a written copy of my testimony. In addition to that, I've also submitted some written testimony from the Oregon Students of Color Coalition, because they weren't able to be in attendance. So you should have both of those. See, he's delivering them now. I'm letting you know that I'm speaking today specifically in support of educational, cultural, and cognitive programs inside Oregon prisons. It is not often I introduce myself, but just to cut right to the chase, I mean, I've lost a close family member to murder. I've spent years of my life, at this point actually probably a majority of my life, working around issues around domestic and sexual violence and supporting survivors of those crimes. And I have a number of people in my life that have been affected by addiction. So that was the way in which I started coming in contact with the prison system here in Oregon, was my interest in preventing these types of horrible things from happening to people and being committed to preventing them and dealing with the effects of them. So I've been a volunteer with the WICS program in the past, and currently I'm a frequent guest of the Chicano Culture Club and other cultural clubs at the activity section of the Oregon State Penitentiary. And I have to say that, you know, especially for me as someone who's lost a family member to murder, is very intense to meet the men, many of whom come to know at OSP, some of them who are lifers who are serving sentences for crimes similar that I have supported loved ones who have dealt with the effects with, and meet them and really respect them as individuals and really get a chance to participate in them becoming people who will no longer do these types of things. And one of the things that I've definitely noticed is that they come to the programs and they could be doing other things. There are lots of things that one can spend one time doing in prison, and a lot of them will not prevent further crime. You know, the activity section and programs like that really do actually, if people are in prison and ready to change, that's what the programs are there for. And it would seem almost cruel to me to actually put people in prison, sentence them to time, and demand that they do something different, and then deny them every opportunity to change their behavior. And I realize there's a lot of pressure on you. I mean, I recognize as a victim of crime and someone who said this in the past, that push to punish people, to send them to prison with the hope that that is enough. And what I can tell you from having visited there, having spent years talking to people around corrections policy, that it is not this place that we can just send people to and they will be miraculously changed. We really have to invest in the resources that are going to create that change. And programs and treatment are a way to do that. I had a chance to meet people, you know, who were working on this, and one of them recently I was at a conference and a superintendent was speaking there and got specific questions from audience members about the cuts that were being proposed and said, what are you going to do? How are you going to deal with this? I mean, people in administration are clearly committed to the programs, and the response was, well, we're just going to hope for the best. And I was like, well, now's not really the time to address that. But what I really want to say to you is that is not enough. I actually believe that the Department of Corrections has a wonderful mission statement in requiring accountability of people, and that same mission has to apply to the Department of Corrections. They have to be held accountable for generating results that are going to increase public safety. And we all know that programs are a way to do it. More beds in and of themselves will not equate more safety. And I've heard you speak about that in the past, Superintendent DeHaan. So I really want to call on us. I recognize it is incredibly unpopular. I recognize myself as a survivor of crime. I have been in the past with people saying, no, the longer we lock people up, the better. And I'm here to tell you that I've had an opportunity to really see the effects of that policy, and now I support programming in its forms and also efforts to evaluate that programming, which I know the DOC is also interested in, to find out how it's effective and where we can wisely put resources to prevent future crime. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for coming. We've got several people left on the list. We will have them as invited testimony. We're not going to add and reopen the public hearing on Wednesday, so we will invite the people who are remaining on the list. I'd like you to confirm with Doug and I immediately after I recess the hearing. The people whose names I have on the list are Arwin Byrd, Victoria Heck, Kristofferson, Chip Shields, Steve Watkins, Donna Slapak, Sandy Mayer, and Jackie French. I have a group from Crime Victims United of Oregon. I also have the group from Marion County.
Christine Kirk from Multnomah County, Karen Nibbler from the League of Women Voters, and then the group from Association of Oregon Counties, Richard Burke of the Libertarian Party, Peter Ozan, and Mary Botkin from AFSCME, and Brian DeLashman. So if those people can come up to confirm whether you're going to appear or not. But with that, the committee for today is adjourned.